What's going on, everybody? Welcome to hello. We're nice and warm inside.
But yeah,
it has been anything but. If you're in pretty much the Midwest,
I woke up. You live just a couple streets over.
Yeah.
We'll talk to Jake Miller from Heirloom Rustic Ales here in just a minute about what it's like in his neighborhood. He lives in the neighborhood I used to live in.
Oh, okay.
He right and Melissa, on. Yeah. And I woke up this morning to a nice layer of ice. I couldn't get down the stairs.
I had to crawl out of my house to get to my truck.
Are you serious?
I'm 100% serious. If you had had a camera on me facing my house, it would have been this weird looking man coming out.
This weird looking man. I mean, you could say that anytime you leave your house.
That's fair.
This weird looking man, but weird looking
Weirder all, looking weirder, man.
Yeah, on all fours.
Yeah,
that's interesting. You want to get right into Mr. Miller?
Yeah, we have a bunch of stuff.
Let's go.
There
Hello.
He is. Hey, you lost a layer. What's going on, man?
I did. I'm just post workout, and that was one too many.
One too many. Okay, let's talk about the workout thing right now. So, I do, and I gave Austin Cavern him. I said you have to drink an air beer since.
Hell Jake's yeah, on. That's my favorite.
It's so good. It's such a good Kolsch.
I think it's my favorite of yours too.
Well, I picked
this
a good
is such
one,
a
man.
Great beer.
It is. It really is. Workouts. Okay, so I do Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. I do cold plunge, and I count that as a workout in the morning. And then Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, I go to Hot Works, and I do either cycle, rowing, or this like elliptical type thing in a 130 degree infrared sauna for 15 to 20 minutes.
Sounds very intense.
It's fine, but I mean, it's relatively quick. What I could not do is what you do, Jake, which is the CrossFit world. It just looks like it hurts.
it does, but it's like, yeah. I try to, the way I describe it and why I like it is because it's basically the only time in my entire day that I'm fully present anywhere.
Interesting. Okay.
It's so brutal and you're just surviving that there is not another thought that's coming in. I mean, there's no like, man, today sucked, or I've got to figure out what I'm going to do about this, or I've got all of these little things I've got to work on. There's none of that. It is all gone. And you are just there for an hour trying to make it. And
I really love that. I didn't think about it that way.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I didn't do it because like I'm into CrossFit or because I'm just like one of those people that's like trying to take creatine enemas and be that guy. It's
shooting creatine
sounds awful.
Yeah. I did it just because I needed something that helped me cope with just stress. And it has been the best thing ever for that. So
awesome. I need to take a page out of your book.
Yeah.
Do what?
I need to take a page out of your book.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, and it sneaks up on you. And then before you know it, it's like, man, I've gained like 15 pounds and not the good ones. And I'm just kind of like lethargic. Yeah. And for me, it hit when I went to Colorado. And I mean, I used to be a backpacking guide. I used to be like in incredible shape. And I went there last year, and like the first like 2 mile hike, I was just like gasping. And
yeah, it's
like,
a different animal up there. It's
yeah.
A different animal.
Yeah. And I was just, I mean, it's kind of crazy for me because it was just like, man, I haven't done any physical fitness in 4 or 5 years, which is not like my style either. So I just realized I needed to do something, and I love the intensity of it. I love that I have to go to the gym, and then the coaches that we have at this particular gym just have incredible programming. So I mean, it's like crazy the gains that I've made in the last 6 months. It's nuts.
That's awesome, man.
So
I told
you've been
you
doing it for 6 months.
I mean, I told you look swole. I wasn't kidding.
I don't know about that, man. Like I said, I'm just trying to, like, when I walk out of that gym, I feel like I may not make it to the car, like, every time.
But that's the best. I mean, it sucks, but it's also the best feeling.
Yeah. No. And then when we mash in the morning, oh my God, dude, like I'll pick up a bag and just collapse. It's it's rough. It's rough. It's
the bag defeated me.
Yeah. The bag wins yeah. this one. Yeah,
exactly. Nothing like working out to be sore all of the time.
Right. Right. Well, okay. So you mentioned the stresses of what you do, what Austin does. I mean, we all three own businesses, but you two own very similar businesses.
Yeah.
Heirloom Cabin Boys, for those watching that don't know.
Amen.
So let's talk about this time of year and the additional stresses that can bring. Here's what I'll give you kudos for, Jake. And I know you guys do it as well, but I've just noticed on social recently, you guys are exhausting all creative options to get bodies into your brewery. I think there was a soup. What was it? Like a soup thing yesterday? Is that right?
Yeah. Sober soup off.
Sober soup off.
Sober soup off. Yeah.
Which I just laughed and like, I really wanted to go. I couldn't make it, but I really wanted to go. We'll talk about the new venture opening up early next month, but you're going to take advantage of the earlier hours in the day before the brewery opens to get people in to experience something else. But how stressful, I mean, and both of you can kind of take this and go wherever you want with it. But how stressful, Jake, has this time of year historically been, not just for Heirloom, but for the industry, the beginning of the year, January timeframe?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's, you know, you have like one or two other months besides January that you just see dramatic slowdown and sales kind of not be where they normally are. And it's always stressful, but January, I feel like, has this really particularly stressful scenario, because not only are you dealing with obviously people no longer drinking or taking some time off, which I think is great, but you have that, and then you also have just crazy weather. I mean, this is a great example, like going from, you know, 3 days of 20 degrees and like 0 degree wind chill, and nobody from Tulsa is trying to get out in that. And right, then you go from that to like, it's going to rain the next 3 days and like kind of pretty heavily and be cloudy. So it's like, not only are you dealing with just people making lifestyle changes all this month, it's also that this month is just not very hospitable to begin with. And so, and it's tough because, you know, your budget really doesn't change. I mean, it's not like we can all of a sudden start ordering like, you know, different grain that's going to save us a ton of money, or like payroll's still going to be there waiting for you. I mean, all those things still come through at the same amount as your best months. And so it's constantly problem solving, but I think it helps the more you do this, like, you know, it's coming in November. We're already talking about events. We try to do beer releases in January. You know, we try to put a lot in there that kind of gets people in. Like you were saying, you know, like the sober soup off. Jess basically starting in November is like, I've got to get events down. I've got to figure some things out. And then we have so many connections now with so many different people in this town that, you know, I think we're going to have probably 5 sober based events when this month.
That's awesome. Nice. I actually really respect that from a brewery that doesn't make non-alcoholic beer. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's not your clientele, but I'll speak for other people, which is kind of a dangerous thing to do, but it makes it feel inclusive, right? Like, if I don't drink and I have buddies that are going to a brewery and they go to, let's just say, Heirloom, and I know that I've been to events there that I was able to get non-alcoholic drinks, Phony Negronis, best day brewing beers and all that, like, I would feel more welcome to go there. I think that's a really cool thing.
Yeah. I think, you know, it helps too that, like, when we started, like, way before, you know, generationally speaking, people were just deciding not to drink, we were already bringing in a lot of NA options to be more inclusive, just because what was weird for me when I started brewing 10 years ago, like whenever dry January would come up, it was pretty common in the brewing industry to like jab at people that were practicing dry January.
Yeah, almost make fun of them. Yeah.
Yeah. And just like, I think that's fucked up. I really do think, you know, as much as I need the business and people to come in, I'll never be able to be one of those guys that's like, you guys need to drink more. Come on. Like,
right.
I just,
right.
I really can't get behind that kind of mentality. And so we've been kind of offering as many possibilities as we can for a long time. Because we do some, like, we'll have noise shows and stuff like that. And a bunch of straight edge lifestyle people want to come to those. And you got to have things that they can drink. And I don't mind that we don't make it, too. I mean, my theory is like, we put a lot of effort into beer. And I'm just fine with letting other people do the other things better than we ever could and sending people in that direction.
Let me ask both of you a question, and this might be a stupid question. I think I already know the answer, but could you brew like a non-alcoholic beer while you're also brewing regular beer? I mean, it would obviously take up like some space, right? You'd have to have its own dedicated thing, but it's not like a plant where like, if you have a nut allergy, they're making, they can't make anything because it could cross contaminate or something like that. You could physically like find a way to do it if you wanted to, right?
You could, you could buy equipment to do that.
But is it, to de-alcoholize it or whatever the term there is.
You could, I guess, reboil it. Have you ever heard of that, Jake? Someone like reboiling?
Yeah, just basically taking a finished beer and then putting it back in the kettle and pasteurizing it that way.
Yeah.
And taking the alcohol out just through heat. That's kind of the way it's been done for a while, and I just think it sucks.
Oh, it tastes awful. I mean, it tastes like a re-microwaved macaroni and cheese or something.
I mean, I think, Jake, what you hit on is just the key there. Like, there's enough beer to go around, and you guys, both of you, make good enough beer that for people that drink beer, like, you're going to survive. So let the people that the companies that make non-alcoholic beer well, and that's all they do.
Yeah.
Let them specialize in that and just sell it.
I think that's the difference is like, you know, Athletic or Best Day or, you know, those Best Day has some really good stuff.
Yeah.
Which is wild to me that someone can make a non-alcoholic beer.
Yeah. I gave him the Kolsch and the West Coast IPA last week and he blew his mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was incredible.
Yeah.
But like that's all that they do.
Right. Right.
I've spent,
as far as I know,
Jake and I we've spent our whole entire life perfecting fermentation to taste good,
sure,
and make an actual beer. So I am in the boat with you, Jake, on your sentiment of I'll let someone else do that and bring that in.
Yeah.
Now we do make a hop water. Do you, Jake? Do you guys make a hop water, Jake?
We don't. We don't.
It's fun. It's fun.
Yeah.
It's easy.
And those are good too. Like, I'm trying to think of the one. I think it's the Lagunitas one that I'm like, I kind of hate how good. Much I like
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is good. I want to touch on something you said, and then we can move off of the depressing
January. January will stare you in the face.
Numbers anytime. And books. Yeah. But so when you're prognosticating for the year and you're making your performance and your budgets and all this stuff, you can't buy cheaper grain or like you were talking about, but do you scale back production knowing that the month will be a little shorter on the people coming in and buying beer, or do you make the same amount and then just have it for February and whatnot and hope you sell it?
Yeah, for us, it really doesn't shift. I mean, that's the thing. When you have a staff, you basically staff to take on your most busy time. Mm-hmm. And I haven't figured out a creative way to do that I feel ethically okay with, you know, hey, like you're here for, I guess, these off and on every now and again for a couple months. And then, you know, we say goodbye to you in the winter. I just, I don't know any way of doing that. And no, we're never going to let go of any of our staff. So we just, it's more of like, I mean, I kind of love January because it just means that our loggers get more time.
There you
and
go.
And so they like roll out in February and I'm like, man, I wish we could add two more weeks every single time. And that's kind of the way that we work through it. But I mean, like you said, it's like any other business. You know, I worked for Patagonia and managed a store there and looked at those P&Ls all the time. They have slow months, you know, that you can see coming and you've just got to be ready for it. And hopefully you're making enough money in other months to cover the slow ones. And I mean, that's really the only way to do it.
The beautiful song and dance of owning a business, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Or just, yeah, I've coped with it by, you said it earlier, you just kind of get used to it. You kind of, I kind of get numb to it.
Yeah.
You're used to it. You do the fun events that you try to make fun in January, and then you close on a day like today.
Yeah, right.
You just give up.
Yeah. I want to get your opinion on something, Jake. So last week, Austin asked a question that I thought was a really good question, and I've been thinking about it ever since, actually. So it was basically saying, you know, if you think back to, what did you say, like 04?
Yeah.
04, 05, 06, back in like the early, just like when we were, you know, the state wasn't getting a bunch of out-of-state beers, and so the craft beer scene was just, I mean, there would be lines for beer releases at liquor stores, and it was just this new hip thing, and I don't know if it's cyclical or what it is. I mean, now people line up for bourbon. I think agave spirits are probably up next. I think some attention will swing over there, but Austin posed the question of how can we make craft beer fun again, new again, kind of freshen it up a little bit. And I know that's a weighty and a big question to just throw on you with zero preparation, but do you have any thoughts on that? Like when you hear that, do you have anything that comes to mind, or maybe you've thought about it just on your own, you know, over the past couple of years, like how do you get back to that coolness, if you will? Not that it's not cool now, but it was just so neat and new, you know, novel at the time.
I don't want it. You know, I worked through all those and was a part of brands that were in the middle of all that. And, I hate it.
Fair.
It's like, I felt like all that did was breed all kinds of entitlement, exclusivity, all things I don't associate with beer at all. And, you know, to me, I just got back a few months ago from going to England and just basically hitting, I mean, we drove across the entire country. And to me, that's what I want beer to be. Those pubs over there, people showing up, they drink the same beer that they've drank for the last 10 years. They drink three of them, four of them, they're 4%, and then they leave and go home. And I think that's what I want beer to be and what I hope it is. And I think people are struggling with, you know, like starting breweries, and it's like, man, we're doing our barrel aged release, and, you know, I don't think anybody's really going to care too much. We might sell, you know, this amount or that amount, but, you know, it's not going to be like 7,000 people talking about it and asking people to get it and people proxying up, you know. It's,
right, right.
And I think people that started breweries assuming they were going to be able to do that. I mean, I feel bad for them because it's just, I mean, it's a supply and demand thing. I mean, when you have 10,000 people pumping out beers, and there really aren't that many secrets anymore. I mean,
that's
you don't even
true.
Really see like the hot breweries that everybody was pining for to get those four packs and people literally pulling up with dollies and taking out four cases of them. You don't really see that anywhere anymore because people have started to realize that like somebody in your state is probably making them just as good, and they're probably going to be better by the time they get to you anyway, because they're fresher. Yeah. and they didn't go through the shipping process, and you didn't have to pay at the end of the day like $35 a four pack because they got shipped to you. So for me, I think it's actually right where it's supposed to be. And the cruel kind of piece to it is, you know, there's just going to be some people that lose out, that are making damn fine beer and run great businesses. And it's just because at some point we hit a saturation level. But as far as like the culture of beer, I think we needed to get away from that stuff. I mean, I think that that was actually a negative thing for beer and the trajectory of it. And I think now what I see that I love, you know, like the, just to keep it optimistic, because there's plenty of things I could talk about that make me cynical too, but
sure. We don't have to go down that route.
You know, like Suarez is one of my favorite breweries out of New York, and his stuff is just getting torn up because he can distribute now to almost every state in the country. And so he's just selling, you know, cases here and there of fresh lager whenever they come out all over the place, and people are buying it all up, and he runs out of every beer that he posts and then posts another one. And they're all just normal ass beers that people are excited to try from somebody making the best versions of normal beers. And, I think there's actually a lot of good stuff out there. It's just hard to kind of focus on that stuff when you see more brewery closures than you've ever seen historically. But I think there's no getting around that. I mean, at some point we got to, there's just how many breweries does your town need?
Like, right. Yep. I mean, I feel like the same thing will happen to the dispensaries. You know,
oh,
I mean,
that's starting. Yeah,
we have more dispensaries on corners than we do churches, and this is the Bible Belt. It used to be a church on every corner. Now it's two dispensaries on every corner.
Yeah.
But the brewery closures that you're talking about, Jake, I mean, it's starting to hit close to home. I know at least a couple handfuls have closed over the last few weeks and months in Oklahoma City, and so it's creeping its way. I don't know what way it's going, but pretty much all across the country. I'm curious though, that entitlement that you talked about, that, you know, the early on and all that stuff, the craze brought, were you seeing that more when you say that, are you referring to entitlement from brewery owners and brewers or from consumers or both?
I think a little bit of both. Like, I mean, I don't have any problem saying that, you know, working at Prairie, every time we did a release, it just felt like the world was both beginning and ending all at once. Like, the amount of people and the amount of energy and tension that brought about was nuts. But then it was kind of funny because I was like, it's just like me, Chase, and Colin in this shitty warehouse, you know, trying our best and learning. Like, the funny thing is like, you know, we were always talking collabs back then. You would learn things. It would be like, I'm brewing with so-and-so, and I would always come out of those like, holy shit. Like, I can't believe I've been doing that this way this whole time when I should have been doing it this way. And I mean, I look back on some of the things that I made and some of the things that we made and just like, I mean, people weren't like, so whenever you're taking a finished beer and you're about to package it, you put it in a tank that's specifically made to package beer out of. Like, we weren't even purging those tanks like 8 years ago. So like all this oxygen would get into the beer would be like completely dead like 2 weeks after it got packaged, but it didn't matter because it was all gone. Right. And right. But I mean, I still have people that are like, oh man, those are the best beers I've ever had in my life. And I'm like, they weren't. They actually weren't.
They were crude.
Yeah. And a lot of, and I think that there's a lot of like, there was a time frame. The Prairie time frame was perfect. You know, Tired Hands, Sante Adarius, all of the, and they're talented people and talented breweries. But more than all of that, for sure, was the timing and hitting that that perfectly. But I can tell you, every brewer that works for those places hated it. Because you just had, there's a thing that happens when people line up, you know, and they have high expectations. You have people that have zero qualifications to be critiquing beers the way that they do. And just like absolutely shredding things all the time. And, yeah. You know, and then like, because they bought releases, it's like, well, can we have a bottle share out in the parking lot and get hammered on your kind of property? Not really ask.
And then drive off. Yeah.
Yeah. All that stuff. And that stuff all was disgusting to me. You know, that's not the culture that I want from beer. I want beer that, you know, you pay $6-7 for, it's a great experience. You hang out with your buds and you go home. Yeah.
No, I'm 100% with you. And what you said about England, I mean, that was when I went over there for the Olympics, that was one of the things I enjoyed the most. Was I would get lost every day on purpose. Like I would take the tube, I would get off somewhere where I didn't get off before. I knew how to get back, like where I was going. And so I would just intentionally get lost. And I stumbled upon some of the coolest pubs and just some of the coolest areas. There was this one bar, I'll never forget it. It was called The Grapes. It was right on the River Thames, and it was where Dickinson used to sit and write, or Dickens. And so I went in there, like they saved his stool, like the bar hadn't changed.
That's awesome.
And had a pint of Timothy Taylor's, and just like hearing the locals, you know, basically on their way home, like you're talking about, like coming in, talking about their day, commiserating or celebrating or whatever it is, you know, loving on their friends and then going home. Like it's community, right? I mean, that's at the end of the day, that's what it is. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's, I think too, it's like, because of the connectedness of the internet and social media and those kinds of things, like, you know, beer has just gotten, the bar is so much higher. Beer has gotten better. You know, like when we do Lagerland in May,
great,
the last Lagerland, like walking around in those tents, it was just like, man, this is so much fun, and there's so much good beer being poured right now, and it's all from Oklahoma, and it's crazy to see how the state's developed in the last 5 years.
100%.
That is an awesome festival, by the way.
Yeah. Jimmy. And I do believe tickets are on sale right now. Early bird tickets.
They are.
Philbrook.org. So log on and get it. I will be there again. You will be there.
Oh yeah.
Jake will be there. Obviously you put the thing on. So
yeah,
it's and shout out to Philbrook, by the way. They are now a finalist for best art museum in the country from USA Today.
Are you serious?
Awesome. Yep.
So you can go, there's a website. There's a link. If you look at Philbrook's Instagram page, I believe
that's
where
awesome.
You can go vote. So it's like a public vote thing.
Go Tulsa.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic. Okay. So I teased it earlier with doing things with your space and with your business when you're not there. And I've known you long enough, and I hope you're okay with me sharing the secret, but you are a coffee snob, a lot like me. We like good coffee. It just is what it is. And so when I saw the news come across Instagram that Coffee at Heirloom is opening in the relatively near future, I got really excited. We'll have John on later to actually talk about the details of the program and all that stuff. But just from the business owner side, what went into the thought process and the decision to take your space, which is a brewery, but open it in the morning hours before it's open as a brewery, just to get more people in and drum up interest and make sales and all that stuff?
Yeah. Well, I think it's just kind of the mindset of Heirloom, you know, has always been more than a brewery, you know, like a brewery is what is standing there. But I think if you ask anybody to talk about Heirloom, like they're talking about all the events, all of the charity stuff, all of the gatherings. I want that place to be a place where people are just in and out of there all of the time, listening and engaging with different folks. And you know, when you open at 3, it's like, man, there is a whole like huge amount of time, and we have this incredible space. I mean, Melissa, I think, did an amazing job with that space.
Absolutely. It's gorgeous. And, yeah.
You know, and for all those people planning on maybe owning their business someday, you drop like $500,000 in a build out and you're just like, and it gets used like not even half the week. And so I've always brainstormed this and tried to figure it out, but it's also like when you're allowing someone else in your space, it needs to be the right person. And I also just don't have the bandwidth right now to like manage another concept or see another concept through. And I know that Jess doesn't either. So that's where it was like, man, John would be perfect. And John and I, like, we talk a lot about coffee, and he's just one of those people that we agree a lot on coffee. We both like the same things, seek out the same things. And I mean him to like 10 times the level that I do. I mean, at any given time, that dude going over to his house and just seeing what coffee he has available, and what coffee he's making for himself is just like mind blowing. He's got incredible stuff all of the time. And I think it'll be fun too, because I'm sure he'll talk about this some, but obviously since Cirque, he's had a lot of time to kind of brainstorm, you know, what else he wants to try and do. Mm-hmm. And so I think it'll be really fun. And, yeah, I'm really excited.
That actually brought up a good point, which I might should have led with. Is this, you are lending your space to like a separate business, if you want to call it that, that's going to come in and for a better term office out of there, or is it something that Heirloom is involved in from like an ownership standpoint or whatever?
No, it's 100% John.
Gotcha. Okay.
It's 100% John. It's just the space that we're giving him. So the whole concept is his kind of thinking and kind of his passion project. So, I'm excited for you to talk to him though, because everything he's told sounds amazing.
Yeah, I can't wait, because I think we both do coffee. Probably too many subscriptions, if that's a possible thing.
Right.
So I don't know if I need more coffee in my life, but there's going to be more coffee in my life because I trust that guy to brew up some incredible, incredible coffee. So that's going to be really, really cool to see.
Well, and here's some cool stuff for you, John, too, that I think will really speak to you. For one, I know for me, a struggle with coffee in Tulsa is like, it's kind of funny that, like, I don't know what happened during the pandemic, but basically coffee shops open at like 9 now, which doesn't really help me much. And so this actually be open in the morning. And so if you're going to work, you can actually get a coffee on the way to work. And that has, if you want to office for an hour or two, you can do that.
Yeah. I love that. And that's so true too, because when I've like driven down to Dallas to see family or whatever, and I leave at 6:30, 6:45, and I get to where I think the coffee shop is, I'm not going to call out anybody, but I think the coffee shop would be open at 7 and it's not open for another hour, hour and a half, 2 hours. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
What is the point? I need my coffee.
Yep. He might like, you know, play with the hours or shift them around a little bit, but I know that's something that he talked about too. And I'm like, that's actually really exciting, because kind of what spurred this on too is I had so many people asking if they could just pay me a monthly fee to office out of Heirloom while we were closed, and just use it as a workspace, because they're like, I need to get out of my house. I can't do as much work if I'm in my house, but I also don't want to pay like a full blown big deal monthly kind of
36 degrees north or whatever.
And just wanted something a little more subtle and laid back. And I was like, I started to try to put that together, but basically what I realized is that they kind of just wanted a coffee shop and that they could office out of. And I think Heirloom will be ideal for that. But John already has a manager in place, and the manager's an F1 fan. And so it also means that we're going to have a sweet spot to watch those races in the morning with like really good juice. So
yes, Tulsa F1 fan club on Facebook. Find it and join it for all of the updates there. I did a shitty job of operating that last season, so apologies to anyone that is a member of that Facebook group. But it was a weird year for getting together to watch races, though. Like, you were out of town, I was out of town. Races were early. It was a weird year. But
it was. I think we were both also just where we were at with work and life and stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to kind of put together programming for 6 a.m. race day.
Yeah. And Bo isn't a big fan of coming in early to make pizzas for F1 watch parties. So that you might be like, a little hungry too.
Hey, as cool as the five of you are, it was not worth starting a
fire. It's about right. Yeah. It's about right. Yeah. No, but it'll, that was a professional segue, by the way, because you knew I wanted to ask you about F1. So kudos. You're getting good at this live talking thing. Yeah. So we'll have some fun news about that coming down the pipe a little bit. But before I let you go, and I told you around 8:30, so I want you to get back to your normal life and tell Melissa and the puppies I say hello. But before you go, we got to talk F1.
Yeah.
Is this the year for Ferrari?
Oh my gosh.
Is it the year?
You would try to get my hopes up.
Just asking the question.
Yeah, I think Ferrari is like the Chicago Cubs, you know? Mm. Like, we've had years and they're great when they're great. Mm-hmm. But you kind of go into it just expecting to slog through it. And, you know, and it's,
sounds so enjoyable.
as a Ferrari fan. Yeah, it really is. That's why you got to have like side hustles like McLaren. Because it is brutal. And I mean, the last 3 years have just been, oh my God, dude, it's so rough. I feel like I needed to go to therapy for Charles.
I felt you could just see the depression setting in as the season progressed and just the things that went wrong with that car and the strategy. And I mean, he had a couple driver errors too, but you could just see the depression mount.
Yeah. I don't know. I would literally sit down 10 minutes before a race and I would say to myself, I wonder what fucked up thing is going to happen to Charles today. And I was like, I wonder what his headspace is like if I already know.
Oh, yeah. Like, how do you get behind a machine like that and not have the confidence that.
Yeah, you're getting into a rocket you don't trust.
Yeah.
But then there's like moments too where, like, and I think as a Ferrari fan, you've just got to take what you can get. We are the only team that led laps last year that wasn't a Red Bull. And that pass that Charles did on Perez in Vegas, pulling 6 G's, dude, that was the coolest thing I've seen in my F1 years.
That was really, really cool.
I don't know how he did it.
I feel bad for you and for Ferrari fans just in general, because I feel like they get your hopes up early in the season, pretty much every year.
Yeah.
Like, you're right there. You're winning a race. Yeah. You're finishing second. You're spending all this money, your upgrades. And then as the season progresses, Max just decimates everybody in his path. And now McLaren and Mercedes, and now it's going to be a really fun race. I'm assuming you're of the mindset that Max just blitzes his way to another title.
Oh yeah. I'm wondering who's going to win second.
That's what I was going to say. So there's going to be a really good race for second place, assuming Red Bull's in first from the,
I don't even side. Think it'll be close again. I think he'll be miles ahead, but I'm really excited to watch Lewis and Charles and McLaren and, see what kind of, I just want some good racing. I want some good overtakes. I'm actually really excited to watch Vegas again. I felt like that was the funnest race of the entire season, which going into that, everybody was talking so much shit and nobody went. And it ended up being my favorite race by like,
it was really cool. It was really cool. But of course the car that got completely fucked up by the track not being right.
Yeah.
Was a Ferrari.
And then we got penalized for it, dude.
And then you, yeah. So I don't know if you know
this.
Kick
them while they're down.
Yeah.
Kick them while
so
they're down.
So Carlos Sainz runs over a manhole cover that wasn't properly sealed.
Oh, I heard about
it. It pops up and like ruins the underside of his car and he has to fix it. But because he fixed it, they had already done the allowed number of changes to the car. So he got penalized grid spots for the start because he had to fix an issue that was caused by the track not being ready to. Yeah, it was a whole thing.
That's so stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, and they didn't do any amendments or anything.
No.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think, but you know, Ferrari fans, dude, we knew it was coming.
Only of course you would be the ones being hit by a manhole.
Right.
They're like,
Let's see. We have car designs or like liveries or whatever coming out in February. I believe Drive to Survive comes out in February too, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll be a fun season. I don't know. We'll see.
I always think they're fun. Just because you always get a little something that you didn't know about.
That's true.
Netflix is, dude, I'm so glad that I'm not a celebrity that Netflix is trying to make a documentary about. Because
they churn them out.
Those folks are everywhere.
They really are.
And seem to have a gift for like, so-and-so looks pretty disgruntled. We should probably have a camera on him for the next 72 hours and see where he goes with this. And
I should know this because it's more in my world, but I wonder when they have to stop filming or like, you know, to go through the post-production process for the episodes. Yeah. But then like, so what I'm getting at is with Gunther Steiner getting released from Haas, like, I wonder if the cameras were rolling. Cause that happened 2 weeks ago. So I wonder if they still had cameras there and maybe can like amend an episode and like put it on the back end of one of the later episodes. I don't know.
He's such a face for the F1 brand. You would think that they are going to have to cover that in some way.
Yeah.
But
you would think so.
I mean, they also though, like, you've seen those principals be like, Netflix, no, get out of here. We're getting ready to like have a real meeting that you can't be in here for.
Yeah. This isn't for entertainment. This is.
I have to commend Netflix, though. So and you guys forgive me because I became knowledgeable about F1 when Netflix, that series, Drive to Survive, came out. I will state that upon myself.
Nothing.
But
wrong
I
with
love
that.
Watching it.
Yeah.
Love watching those series and whatnot. And I don't know if I would have ever known anything about F1 without that series. And now I kind of follow it.
They've done it.
It's kind of cool.
They're trying to push that onto other sports, but they're just not doing a good enough job, if I'm being totally honest and critical. Like Breakpoint, I think is what they call the tennis one.
Yeah.
That they're doing.
Yeah, I didn't watch that one.
So I was watching this the other day and I noticed it and I didn't say anything and I should have. And someone pointed it out on Instagram and I saw it this morning. The post-production on that series is so bad. There's an episode in this current season that's out. I won't tell you which one, but you can find it, where the editing. So it's match point in this women's match at a major. And the angle of the shot. So the girl they're showing or whatever is serving from the deuce side of the court, right? It's a zoom in close up. And then they whip to a wide shot and she's on the ad side of the court serving.
Sick. Oh, no.
And then she serves it to her opponent's forehand on the wide shot. And then they push in and the opponent's hitting a backhand.
That's so that like, 1 week post-production for the entire show.
And it's done by, and you can tell it's done by people that don't watch tennis, that have no idea, like can't catch the details like that because they don't really, it's probably a combination, right? They probably don't know or really watch tennis, but then also they're just crushing to try to get it out in, you know, a few minutes, basically.
I think that's what happens whenever it's like, you know, even you put billions of dollars behind something, if it's not authentic, it's hard to hide that.
No, you're 100% right. Well, man, it's a little past when I told you I would keep you, so I'll let you go, but thank you for coming on and I'm excited to see Coffee at Heirloom, and we'll, we'll catch up and discuss F1 things soon.
Actually, go get coffee in the morning.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Again.
Yeah, thanks for having me, y'all. Have a good night.
Yeah.
Take care.
See you, dude.
Jake Miller from Heirloom Rustic Ales.
He's awesome, man.
Yeah, he's fantastic. I love Jake. You can just tell he's, and I loved his answer. He wasn't afraid to basically say, no, like, I don't want it to be cool again.
Well, that was, so I think I should have kind of piped in on my question.
And I might have misphrased.
No. It's okay. My question of it was more of like, you got it right. But the sentiment in my heart wasn't, I want lines of people lining up for share or anything like that. It was more or less, you know, it seems
just the excitement around
excitement
the industry,
or it seems like just here for a little bit. Yes, the industry has gotten saturated in most places, but the after COVID, people forgot that breweries were their second or third locations to hang out. So I don't know.
That's true.
Cause I 100% agree with him.
Yeah. No, I mean, that to me is what alcohol in general is.
Right.
Like for some people it's almost medicine.
Correct.
When you get in trouble.
That's the bad part of it.
Yeah. But for me, it's always social. It's you know, I mean, despite the fact that there are 65 bottles of bourbon behind you,
you drink it
with
every
people.
So often. Yeah.
And it's in a social setting, and it's, you know,
right.
I don't know. It's, but he's right. Like there's something to the communal aspect of a brewery.
So my, I guess I could rephrase my question is, how does the brewery become the next neighborhood pub? Does that, like public house?
Sure,
like,
sure.
Because that's what he's talking about, you know, and that's kind of how Germany is, actually.
Most of Europe, probably. Austria, Germany, England.
Yeah, well, Austria, yeah. Austria is more of like the coffee house, cafe.
I see what you mean.
Germany or Munich, Bavaria, is all about the breweries, beer gardens, and then, you know, you go up to England or Ireland, it's all about the pubs, public houses, and all that. So what does it look like for Tulsa for the breweries influencing that production? Where do they, where do they fit next?
I'll think on that. On that. Cause it would be a fun thing to help figure out.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm curious cause obviously I'm in it.
You are. You have a vested interest in the outcome.
I have a vested interest
that.
In that definition.
Yeah. Man.
Yeah. So you signed an LOI. Congrats.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so
that's pretty sick.
We're now negotiating or in the early stages of negotiating. Actually, it hasn't even started yet, but we'll be negotiating lease terms for a warehouse space downtown. So that'll be. That'll be really cool. We'll have a.
I toured that building looking at the Prairie location.
Yeah.
That is. It didn't necessarily fit what we needed.
No.
But it was a wildly and very deceptively large building.
It's massive.
It's huge.
It's massive,
and it's right behind Saturn. And you would never, never think that it's there.
The only downside to that spot is parking. And it's on a concert night if the Tulsa Theater is having a concert.
Yeah.
But if there's a festival, if there's, well, but I mean, like, so the purpose of that post-production studio, it'll be Hollywood level, you know, software, hardware, all that stuff. But like, you know, for the big film productions to come in and rent that space, you don't know how many people are going to be, you know, are all four edit bays and four color suites and two audio mixing rooms going to be full at the same time with people from Killers of the Flower Moon 2 or whatever, right? And
the
so
Tulsa
have to,
usually the Tulsa's parking lot usually has space.
And one thing I'll do is I'll probably try to like make friends with certain people.
Yeah.
Like I know there's the gated lot that's just north of the brew pub in between that and Sound Pony and all that stuff.
Yep.
I used to know the code to that gate when Prairie was operating the
brew pub.
And so I wonder if I could maybe make a deal with them and pay them a little bit of money for after hours to, for people to be able to park there or something.
You probably could.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I'll show you the designs for the editing bays and the color suites and all that. It's going to be really cool. I'm excited. Yeah, it'll be really cool. Yeah, but other than that, it's been a frustrating in the weather for me. Like, it affects you guys, your bottom line, because people don't come into your establishments and spend money. For me, it's like I can't get to people to get their money because they're not at work or they're on vacation for the holidays or they're I need this year to actually start.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
come on.
It's unreal.
Like, get back to work, people.
We had like 5 days of good weather and then we haven't even had a freaking. It's like January 252nd today is what it feels like.
Yeah.
It feels like the longest month ever, partially because I'm not drinking and partially because the weather and everything else.
Yeah. I just don't understand. Why couldn't, I could probably make it a whole lot easier if like, if it was no drink July.
That's interesting.
Because
see, when I play golf and when I go to the lake, that's That's tough.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Though I don't, you know, well.
Because what I just said about drinking for me being
social.
Like if I'm cooped up in my house because there's an inch and a half of ice outside, it's easier for me to not drink. However, I will give myself props. Recently, I've been not only with you, the day one of dry January.
Yeah.
But so I think I mentioned this, but I show up to Bishop Quigley's, speaking of pubs, one of my new favorite pubs.
Great.
Well, my favorite new pub, I'll just say that, showed up with my coffee at like noon on a Sunday, I think it was, because you wanted to have a drink.
Yeah.
But I've been there twice recently. I've been to Tina's. I was able to survive Little Venice, but going to all those places.
Baby shower.
Your baby shower. Yeah. Without having alcohol.
That's amazing.
Tina's has been great. Michael, the bartender there, go give him some love because he makes me what's called a super tonic.
Right on.
And it's actually probably more work than if I ordered an alcoholic beverage, but he squeezes like fresh grapefruit juice, lime juice, orange juice, and then I think some cinnamon and then tonic water. And
nice.
It's freaking delicious.
Right
it's
on.
It's awesome. Yeah.
We're, I'm pretty sure, well, I could be speaking wrong. I know that our bartenders were wanting to or had a complete lineup of non-alcoholic cocktails for the brew pub.
That's awesome.
I think four.
You mentioned that. Are they out now?
Man, I've been in and out of reality for a little while. So I have a grasp of what's going on and thankfully my team's really good so I don't have to know all of the intricate details. So
well, let's plan on meeting up there in the next few days and we'll check it out.
Yeah,
we'll do that.
That sounds good.
We'll play the game here in a minute, see if you can continue on your streak. You nailed one of the
breweries,
I think.
Yeah,
Country Am Brewery, right?
Yeah, Country Brewery. I didn't get the style.
I don't think you got the style right. Yeah,
it was a Denver brewery or a Colorado brewery.
It was Great Divide.
Great Divide.
It was Great
I was
Divide.
About to say Great Lakes, but
we missed that one.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Let's play the game real quick and then we'll get on with our life. I think for those watching on Instagram, well, which by the way, my buddy Josiah was watching from New Orleans. He said greetings from NOLA Bottoms Up.
Sweet.
Cheers, buddy. All right. Your number to pick is between. So for those of you that don't know, Austin gives me a number. Correlating to this is the 700 of the best beers from around the world. It's called Great Beers. It was a Christmas gift somebody got me. It's $15 US, in case you were wondering. He gives me a number, turn to that page, and he has three guesses. It's almost like Guess Who?
Yeah.
Where you're trying to ask questions of elimination.
Right.
And then he, off of those three questions, has to guess the style. And then once he either gets it or doesn't, he knows the style. And then he gets an extra question to guess the country of origin and or brewery if he can nail it. So you were guessing.
I need to some of my team is thinking about studying for their Cicerone qualifications, and if I dive into it I might be getting better and better at this game.
Nice. So you're going between 8 and it was what, 377.
I haven't done a low number. So let's do 14.
Okay, really low. Whew. Okay.
Probably starts with an A.
Oh, yeah, sorry. You're in the A's. Yes, yes.
I've learned how this book works now. Yeah,
you're in the A's. First question.
Okay. Going for the style, right?
Style
first.
I'm going to make my editing job easier later and take a picture while we're sitting here right now.
Okay. Is this style... I'm trying to get creative with my questions that will also help me.
Sometimes you question yourself into a box.
I know.
And it doesn't help you at all.
Is this a style that you would drink in the summer?
Yes.
Okay.
I think.
You think?
Okay. Relatively confident.
Relatively confident.
Relatively.
I guess that's kind of a bad question.
No, it's bad on me for knowing this style, but then also not knowing it well enough to know like the exact answer to that question.
Sure. So, yeah. Okay.
I would drink it in the summer.
Let's just okay.
go with that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Interesting.
I gave you a few nuggets in there.
Too, kind of. By the way. Kind of.
Yeah.
Is it above 6%?
No, it is not.
So it's below 6%. Drink it in the summer. I get one more. Man, I got to get creative.
Yeah, this is where it gets tough because like there's so many different styles of beer. How do you ask questions to narrow down the style?
Yeah.
You know, it's probably, if it's summer, it's probably trending lighter.
Correct.
Under 6%, so it's definitely trending lighter.
Definitely a lighter beer. Definitely probably lighter color. Probably...
You're thinking real hard.
Well, I'm just trying to think of a creative question.
Think of a good question, not a creative question.
Is it a lager?
Shit.
So you don't know. That's an interesting.
I'm going to say yes.
Okay.
This is a tough one. I'm curious to learn, actually.
Okay. And it starts with an A.
Well, you're going for the style, not the...
Right.
The brewery starts with an A. Whoa, hitting the mic.
I would say the style would be a golden ale.
My buddy Jake Baldwin has a good point. There's 32 breweries in Fort Collins, so that's a podcast trip.
Nice.
We'll do, Jake.
That'd be sick.
We could do that. Just go around, like, get some meetings set up.
Oh, yeah,
and, like, some interviews and just go.
That'd be phenomenal.
Run amok in Fort Collins. I missed what you said. You said a style.
Oh, a golden ale.
It is a Keller beer.
A Keller beer.
English. Blah, blah, blah. That is a lager, right?
That is a lager.
Hey, got it.
Well,
summer.
Technically, yes.
Hey, two for two.
So a Keller beer. Why is my tongue not working? A Keller beer is typically a lager that is served directly from the cellar, so it didn't go through any kind of filtration.
Gotcha.
So they're normally hazy. Gotcha. So like a Keller Kolsch.
You gotta say unfiltered and naturally cloudy.
Yeah.
You nailed it.
Yeah.
Jordan Hastings, what's up, dude? And for everyone watching on Instagram, I think it ends live videos after an hour, and we're a minute or two away from an hour. So if that's the case, love you all. I think we'll start putting it on Instagram as well as YouTube at the same time, just because it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Maybe it won't end it. We'll see. But just giving you the heads up that it might. Okay, so one extra question. So you know it's Keller beer, which probably tells you where it's from.
I would have to say Germany.
Correct.
And it starts with an A.
It does.
Ondex?
I don't know how to pronounce it. A-K-T-I-E-N. Achten?
A-K-T-I-E-N.
The origins of brewing at the Achtein Brewery in Kaufbeuren,
can be traced back to the early 14th century.
Wow.
Yeah.
Old.
Been around for a minute.
I've never drank a... Well, I probably have drank a beer from there.
Keller beer and then some other beer I don't know how to pronounce.
Actine?
What was the second beer on that?
What?
The second beer listed on that? On Actine or whatever?
Actine. Kaufbeeren? Oh, that's where it's from. Natural Trubes Keller beer, which natural Trubes, that word, that means that it's...
Oh, it was a Marzen. That's what I was... Yeah.
No, oh, the second one. Yeah, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. No, you're good. You're good. Natur Trubes.
That's a...
Natur Trubes.
Yeah, that literally means natural Trube.
Oh, cool. What's a Trube?
Trube pile is kind of like the leftovers, so it means that they're repitching the yeast into... In that word, they're repitching of the yeast or natural yeast.
All right, give me another number from 8 and 377. You got the country of origin that time.
Got the country of origin.
33%. That's Hall of Fame numbers.
Technically, I almost got the style right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Golden ale or golden. I'd said golden ale, so never mind. Okay, 42.
You are still in the A's.
Oh, wow.
I love this brewery.
Okay.
By the way. Honestly, one of my favorite breweries in the world.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right on. Now it's a test of, do I know that brewery?
You know the brewery.
Oh, well, I mean, no, you... well enough to guess the brewery.
Probably not.
Okay.
Not that you don't know enough. That's but fine. Just that, like,
yeah,
it's not something you see me like walking around with that often, you know. Mm. Yeah.
All right. Is the beer color yellow?
Yes.
Okay. Is the beer clear?
Yes.
Okay. Is the beer style hoppier than normal, such as like above 30 IBUs?
I would probably say yes.
Okay.
Not 100% sure, but I would probably say, and judging by the description, it'd be right around there, but I would probably say yeah.
Okay.
A little higher.
I'm going to say a pale ale.
Close. Export lager.
Oh, okay. Export lager.
The only reason I said the IBUs is because it does say light flowery hops.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It might be around 30, might be.
Export lagers are hoppier.
Okay.
Or they have a larger hop content than normal lagers. Export lager. That's cool. Is it American?
It is not.
Dang it.
No, see, that's a question that puts you into trouble because now it could be any other country.
Yeah, which the European continent is rough to guess.
I'll give you a
hint.
I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
It's the very last A brewery. Page 43 is B's.
I don't know how much that helps.
A brewery you know that would be the very last A in a brewery of 700 of the best beers from around the world.
So I have to guess the country.
My legs asleep.
Do what?
All my legs asleep.
Oh,
that hurts.
I'm going to guess. Oh. Copenhagen? Or that's not a country. Denmark?
Germany.
Germany.
Ayinger.
Oh.
AY. That's why I thought you might.
Oh, that is a great brewery.
That's why I thought you might get it.
Love Ayinger.
Yeah. Ayinger's so good.
I was thinking something different.
Jahren Dirtbier is their export lager. And then the other one they list is the Celebrator, which is their Doppelbock.
But
they didn't list the Oktoberfest, which is one of my favorites.
Yeah. I should have guessed Germany. It's like 50% of or 70% of all the beer coming out of Europe.
Okay, so Instagram did close after an hour. Gotcha.
Right on. Bye, Instagram.
See ya. All right, last one, and we'll wrap it up.
Right on. Is the beer lower than 5%?
I just told you the beer. Oh. You give me a number.
Oh, give me your number. Sorry. Okay. I was skipping one step.
Yes.
75.
Going three low numbers tonight.
Oh, Iyengar. I love that brewery.
Ooh, this is interesting. Okay, you're in the bees.
In the bees.
Wow. Okay.
In the bees.
Question one.
Is it a darker beer?
Yes.
Okay. Is it above 5%?
No.
Right on. That helps.
This actually really makes me want to try this brewery and this beer.
Okay. I'm just going to, well, okay. So is it really dark, as in like opaque?
It is very dark.
So is it a stout?
I don't know. It is what is called a Steinbier.
Oh.
Brewed in the manner of German Steinbiers, caramel toffee and nuts throughout, smoky dry finish, 4.8% ABV.
That is a style.
So I'm not sure. It looks like a stout, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it actually might be a lager. I'm not necessarily super familiar with Steinbiers.
Okay.
It comes out of Germany?
So it is a German style. So is that your guess for the company?
Oh, I didn't ask a question for the country.
No, no.
I'll just ask, is it on the European continent?
No.
Hmm.
Yeah. Huh. This one threw you for a loop a little bit.
Dang.
This was a tough one.
A Steinbier. And it
starts with a B.
It starts with a B. I'm going to say America.
Yeah. It's in the U.S., various locations in Tennessee and Arkansas. It is a brew pub called Bosco's. B-O-S-C-O-S.
Bosco's.
Since 92, this brew pub chain has been a leader in promoting greater knowledge of beer in the Mid-South. Its pubs feature English-inspired cask-conditioned ales with customers invited to participate as cellarmen.
Cool.
Customers as cellarmen. That's interesting.
Interesting.
Brewing secret. Flaming Stone, which is the Steinbier. The brewing process involves red hot chunks of granite being plunged into the wort to caramelize the sugars.
Yep.
That's cool.
It said that it was a German style beer.
So it says brewed in the manner of German Steinbiers.
German Steinbiers. That kind of lava rock also is
it's
Nordic.
Like
Goonstingling.
Yeah. I'm glad you knew what I was doing because I'm doing this.
Well, no, they're boiling the wort with the lava rocks.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's a very, very, very old style. Right on.
I need to look up something as we sign off, though, because I need to remember the last name. There it is. Okay, cool. So next week, we're going to try to have John Pierce on. Looking up his last name. I forgot it.
Sorry, Pierce.
I was just going to say John again. I have John Pierce on to talk more about the actual program of Coffee at Heirloom, because I think that's going to be really cool.
Yeah, it will be.
And then we'll see what else we do. We'll always play the game.
That tradition.
Yeah, and we can have someone else on in the second half hour, or I'll let John pick first or second half hour.
Yeah,
and then we can have somebody else on. Or who are you having on the podcast this week?
I will Kettle probably Editions. Have someone from my brewery on. I need to make the recording tomorrow.
Yes, you do. Don't be late again.
No,
I had to edit out your apology because I got it up on to the platforms on Wednesday night. So I had to edit that out.
Nice. No, this storm has thrown everything.
So let's either try to get your guest from last week or week before last.
Yeah.
Or
that'd be cool.
Or and I don't want to say No, well, yes, but I don't want to say who's coming on Christina's podcast on Friday because she teases it.
Oh, cool.
We could get that guest as well.
Okay, cool.
To maybe come back on Monday.
Sweet.
And I love him or her. So
perfect.
There, how about that? I didn't ruin it.
You That's love great. Them.
I love them. Yes. All right, man. Good to see you.
Right on. Good to Stay see you. Stay safe. Too.
That stair, that step is slippery out there.
I might just be careful. Crawl to my truck.
Full circle. Full circle moment. Love you guys. See you next week.
See
you.